This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's Executive Editor, Anil Padmanabhan. So welcome, Anil. So the first story we're discussing is the farm loan waiver story, and the Yogi Adityanath government in UP has waived off the farm loans, and it's about totaling to 36,359 crores. So do you think this is a good move, an empathetic move, or like a lot of people have said that, you know, it's not fiscally prudent?
See, there are two ways to look at it. These are the fiscal purists who are arguing that there's a moral hazard to waiving off loans because it's a bad precedent. And, you know, people will willfully default because they know their loan will be waived. They are right when they say that. But on the other side, you have this whole rural distress issue. But again, there we should differentiate this rural distress. There is a rural distress which is structural in nature, which is, you know, the way Indian farming has changed, how they've gone to more cash crops, how they become more vulnerable to risks, and which obviously requires structural solutions, which we are still struggling to cope with. But on the other side, you have the vagaries of weather. So if you look at the last 4 years or 5 years, the weather cycle has been extreme at one level, and the rains have been 3 years of drought and subpar rains in most of the country. So these farm loans that we are talking of are linked to the largely to the vagaries of the weather, to which you do need a short-run response. Now, we can quibble about the fact that this is not exactly the best medication to give. But given the circumstances, it is being offered in that context. Yes, politically, the BJP benefited by promising this in the election campaign. But to be fair to them, so did all the other parties. So it was not the only reason that they won this election. But so that's why people are quibbling with it. But net-net, I think you need to address a short-run solution. And this is indeed a short-run solution at this point, what we have. It's not the ideal solution. That, of course, there's no two ways on it. But you have to address the rural distress problem and the issues that farmers are suffering. But I would definitely hope that not just the UP, but all other governments look to longer-term solutions to what farmers are facing. But they are under tremendous risk pressures at this point of time.
Do you think this kind of a move is going to sort of solve or at least resolve temporarily the farmer suicide issue? A lot has been said about, you know, how to identify these farmers because the loan is up to a certain amount that has been waived off. So how do you identify all of that?
See, exactly the point I'm saying. Farmer suicides, why is it happening? Let's ask us that first question. It's very easy to just talk about, get caught in the tragedy of the event that we are talking about, which is natural. You know, I mean, it is on such scale and with such frequency, it is worrying to anybody. I think we need to go beyond as to why is it happening. That why is the risk factor I'm talking of? See, today, the Indian agriculture is no longer a two-crop cycle or a two-season cycle. There are different kind of crops, like say horticulture, for example. Value of horticulture output today exceeds that of food grain production. This has happened for the last 4 years. What does that tell us? There's a fundamental shift in the structure of the agrarian economy. Now, horticulture is good value for the farmer, but highly risky because it is vulnerable to global price pressures. For example, what in India we call the kinnu fruit, which is basically a form of tangerine. Now, global prices collapsed and domestic prices followed. So, kinnu farmers across, particularly North India, where they are located, and in Maharashtra, got burnt very badly. Similarly, you look at cotton. High-yielding variety, BT cotton. So if you drew a map of the suicide areas and you drew a crop map, you will see a tremendous intersection between these new kind of crops and the suicide rate. So what does it tell us? That we are not addressing the risk element in this. And that is what is the worrying factor. We are addressing the, it's like saying you have temperature, but your temperature is arising due to an illness. But I don't address the illness, I address the temperature. I need to address the temperature. But more importantly, I need to address the illness to make sure you're healthy again. I think that is the mistake we are making. So which I repeat my point again. That let's discuss farm loans in a context of a larger package for farmers, recognizing the new reality of Indian farming.
Right. Moving on, we have a story this week on the monetary policy which says that, you know, since Urjit Patel took over as governor, he has presented 4 monetary policy reviews and this was the most smartest one. And just to set it in context, they have decided to leave the repo rate unchanged. So is this your view as well? What do you think of the monetary policy?
See, I'm not sure it's smartest. I will not attribute adjectives to this policy. Because it means that, you know, the other 3 have been
not,
less smart.
Yeah.
So that's a little unfair.
Right.
But you have to look at this policy in 2 ways, very simply. This is hawkish on inflation and optimistic on growth. I think that is the big policy message that is coming through. So there is an inflation threat which continues for the Indian economy. And the Reserve Bank of India, in its wisdom, rightly or wrongly, has decided to target that. Maybe it's the history this country has had in inflation in recent times, where inflation went from single digit to double digits in just the last 10 years. So it is extremely risky to expose India to high inflation at this point of time, where it is trying to emerge as a more competitive economy and addressing a lot of its historical baggage. So the RBI has been cautious, and the good thing is that the growth, they are optimistic. So you see, growth picks up while you're tight on inflation, which is a perfect mix for you. And what is going to help the Reserve Bank of India is the global news. For we are seeing a dramatic turnaround in the global economic fortunes. I mean, I'm not saying it's like doubling or trebling, but the growth is very positive. You can look at the best index or trade figures. For the last 3 months, they have actually gone from negative to positive territory. Part of it is a low base, but the fact is that exports are picking up because global economy is picking up. So that will give a different momentum to India. And if assuming all the infrastructure debottlenecking that this government has undertaken in the last 3 years with various projects, they also kick in, there can be a new momentum to growth. And if you're keeping inflation contained at this point, it's actually great news to any borrower.
In the same sort of light, we had the big GST rollout last week, and it's supposed to be the most ambitious tax reform since, you know, independent India. And the Rajya Sabha has finally cleared it, and probably on July 1st, it'll be rolled out. So what do you have to say to that?
First off, the Rajya Sabha clearance, I think that is fantastic, because most of us feared that they would move amendments largely in pique against this government, but they resisted that. I mean, they had their critical voices, but they didn't. And that political consensus that came through in Rajya Sabha is very important, because like you said, this is the most seminal piece of indirect tax reform this country has ever seen. To put it in one line, what does GST do? I mean, why are we all so excited about GST? It economically unifies this country for the first time. So as an economic unity, the kind of power it'll give you in trade, of course, even external trade, because you doesn't matter where you're located, you'll be as competitive as anywhere else in the country. So which, you know, ensures that we the resources follow the market principles of, you know, they go to the best places. And that's the key thing of GST. And the fact that this consensus has come through makes the July 1st rollout that much more likely than it was. So to me, this is one big thing. And now, of course, all eyes will be on the GST Council, which is due to meet for the final leg, which, as you know, is to basically to compartmentalize which commodities will go into which of the 4 slabs. And they're going to meet in May 18th to 20th in Srinagar to lock it down. God willing, it'll all go well.
So does this mean good news for the consumer?
No, see, that's the thing which I have a bone to pick with this government. They've been repeatedly making this claim that it'll lower inflation. I'm not so sure. You see, what GST is doing, it's possible. I mean, but I wouldn't make it as a claim, as a USP to sell it to you. I will sell it to you exactly as I said, it's an economic unity. And that is very, very big decision. But inflationary, to put it very simply, what are they doing? Their existing taxes are being reoriented. So some of the taxes will be high, some will be low. So it depends on what kind of commodities you consume. Also, it's a consumption tax, shifting the burden of tax to the point of consumption, right? So it depends where you're consuming. So I'm not so sure, you know, if I could make this claim that inflation will come down. Yes, if you're a zero rated good, which is basic items of like salt, for example, is zero rated, which even at the moment it is, it is not going to hurt you, but then, you know, octroi and all these things will not be part of the tax. Yes, it could lower. It could potentially lower. But greater impact could come on inflation through the improved competitiveness of companies, because there is no cascading effect of taxation. There is no indirect losses that arise, because cascading taxes always hurt the consumer in the end.
Right.
So, and it's an indirect tax, so which is not healthy at all. So it's possible that they'll become more competitive, and because they get more competitive, since they're getting tax credits, that they could lower the prices. That is the way the causality would work. But to expect that I'll introduce GST and inflation will fall, no, I don't believe that.
Okay. So let's wait and watch and hope it all goes through. Finally, we end with some good sporting news, where PV Sindhu has, you know, beat the reigning Olympic champion Carolina Marin of Spain and lifted her India Open Super Series title.
Oh, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
I think this girl's having a tremendous run. Mm. It's been now since the Olympics.
Yes.
And of course, this victory is doubly sweet, because she's beaten Marin, who actually beat her in the Olympics very closely.
Right.
It was a closely fought match.
Yeah.
So this was like a grudge match, a revenge match, which she won. And she's only 21. And the progress that she has demonstrated in the last 18 months or so has been dramatic.
Yeah.
And the larger message from this is that she's been preceded by Saina Naival, who was a star but now injured. So I hope she comes back.
Right.
But the larger thing is about what it is doing to bad sport and badminton in particular.
Right.
You know, you have the even the Super League series, which has come, like IPL, which has again created a greater interest in badminton. So overall, it's not just personally for her. And of course, as an Indian, we are all very proud that she's the world number two at this point of time. But to me, the bigger message that she and Saina Naival and their ilk are doing for sport other than the gorilla in the room, which is cricket is a tremendous takeaway.
Right. Great. Thank you so much. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.